Mandy Mathis has written a book called The Littlest Inventor. She wrote it for her son, who was diagnosed with Asperger's and sensory processing disorder. We talk about what these are, as well as her wonderful book. Hey, listen for Mandy to talk about all kids being different, as well as her thoughts and advice centering around this phrase, misbehavior versus missed behavior. Much to learn and understand here today. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy.
They're not here for us. We're here for them. That's what it's about. Kids.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is all about assisting classroom teachers and school administrators to overcome the many walls or barriers that kids face. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is focused on helping you help kids achieve their dreams. As a note, I hope that you will stop by Stitcher or iTunes and leave me a star rating and a comment. That helps the show get noticed by more people. Thanks for listening and joining me week after week.
Welcome to the Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 podcast, bringing you ideas and resources for K-12 classrooms, schools, and school districts. Hosted by Steve Mileto. And now, here's Steve with this week's show.
Hey, did you know that we're now available on Google Play Music? Check us out there. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12. Today I'm talking with Mandy Mathis. Mandy is a wife, mother of three, works at a law firm, maintains a blog, and is an author. She and her family reside in Georgia. Mandy serves on the Butterfly Dreams Farm Therapeutic Writing Program's Board of Directors, and she is a graduate of the University of Georgia's Grady College of Journalism and Pepperdine School of Law. Her youngest son, Sawyer, was diagnosed with Asperger's and Sensory Processing Disorder, SPD. Her book, The Littlest Inventor, tells part of Sawyer's story. She says that teaching Sawyer to comfort, calm, and advocate for himself is one of her greatest accomplishments. Say hi to everyone, Mandy.
Hello.
Thanks for being here, Mandy. I appreciate you spending time with me and with us and with my audience. And, you know, we're talking about your book today, The Littlest Inventor, and about your experiences working with your son. What I'd like to do first is let's kind of get into something here first. In the intro, I talked about something that you're on the board of directors for. Let's start by talking about that organization. It's called Butterfly Dreams Farm Therapeutic Writing Program. What is that?
Well, it's a nonprofit organization that uses horses as a therapeutic partner with the therapist to help the riders achieve their therapy goals. So Sawyer does speech therapy there, which is called hippotherapy. And his therapist, it's amazing because the input that the horse's gait gives him as they ride calms him and focuses him. And he's like a completely different kid than he is in a clinical setting like an office.
Very neat. What type of horses are they?
I'm not a horse person.
Okay.
They're calm old horses. We joke that they're kind of bomb-proof. Some of them are ponies. Some of them are retired show horses. We have one that was an award-winning hunter jumper pony. But when we get them, usually it's for the farm, it's a free lease that the horses still want to do a job and they're still able to do a job, but just not the job that they did when they were younger. And we kind of need bomb-proof horses because we kind of have bomb-like kids sometimes that ride them. And Sawyer does pretty well, but kids are unpredictable and you know, particularly special needs kids sometimes will pull their hair. And so it's good that our horses are very calm and gentle.
Very neat. That's actually what I it's not like I know types of breeds of horses. What you actually described to me is actually what I was curious about was, you know, we got some ponies going here. We got some retired ones. We got different things. That's very cool. So let's talk a little bit about your son, Sawyer. He was diagnosed with Asperger's and sensory processing disorder. Could you explain what these are before we go any further?
Sure. He was diagnosed with Asperger's when there was still an Asperger's diagnosis. Now it's all part of autism spectrum disorder. And you know, autism spectrum disorder goes from a lower functioning to a higher functioning, but it's also fluid and where someone can kind of go back and forth. So every kid with autism has sensory processing disorder, and it's where they struggle with regulating external stimuli in their environment. So where you might have a tag that's itchy on your shirt that bothers you, it becomes kind of all-consuming and debilitating to someone with sensory processing disorder.
Gotcha. So if we could just go into that just a little bit more, are there certain sounds that bother him? Is it a certain type of stimuli in the outs, you know, just around that might be worse than others?
Right. Like I said, autism is fluid and so is sensory processing issues. Every day is different. And so for some days, things that don't bother him, the next day will bother him. It's kind of like a kid that likes different foods and then the next day they hate him. We found that for Sawyer, particularly if he's in charge of the sound, he's more able to tolerate it. So at pep rallies at school, he tends to wear noise-canceling headphones because he doesn't really have control over it. It's in a small gym, the cheerleaders, the football players, it's really noisy. But he takes drum lessons and plays a drum kit. So as long as he can kind of have some control over the volume, you know, I think it feels better to him.
Gotcha. Thank you. You know, in the opening, I repeated something that you have stated in your bio, and it says, teaching Sawyer to comfort, calm, and advocate for himself is one of your greatest accomplishments. What do you mean?
I really mean just giving him the knowledge to know what he means, that he needs, and the confidence to ask for what he needs. We have provided him with a weighted vest at school. He has noise-canceling headphones. He has fidgets, and those change from time to time, depending on what's working for him at the time. But I've always wanted him to have the knowledge of what's out there to help him and access to it, but also the confidence to say, you know what, I need this right now. So he doesn't wear his vest all the time, but he will absolutely tell his teacher, I'm feeling a little squirmy right now. I need my vest on. And we've never made him feel bad for asking that. And I think that's part of his confidence and not feeling so different.
Very cool. Thank you. I got to ask, because you use this term, and it's mentioned in the book, but can you explain what a fidget is?
Oh, sure. Maybe. It's different for different kids, but they have things that you squeeze, so like Stretch Armstrong kind of feeling. Yeah. Sawyer has a fidget like that. We try to send fidgets to school that don't make noise. Some of them are just puzzle things. My dad flips quarters in his hand, and that's really the same thing. It's just something that keeps your fingers moving that can help your body stay still.
I gotcha. Okay, cool. Thank you. So let's start looking into a little bit more of the book. The book, by the way, it's colorful. It's, you know, it's awesome. It's called The Littlest Inventor. Nice illustrations, easy to read, and tells a story. The story is just sends a nice message. Who is your main audience for your book? Is it kids or parents or a little of both or school counselors, teachers? Who's your main audience?
My main audience is kids. I would like everybody to read it. I think it would be good for neurotypical people and spectrum people. I think it's good for counselors and therapists. But I wrote it for Sawyer because I thought he needed a positive literary role model that looked like him. He needed somebody that he could read about that's positive, because, you know, so much about what we read about spectrum kids is negative, and there's not a lot of positive role models on TV or in books about any kind of special needs people.
Oh, that's excellent. You actually have gotten into where I was going to go next, which is why you wrote the book. You know, I kind of hear that coming out of what you're saying, because and where I'm kind of going with this also is that a lot of people say, you know, I need to write a book someday, or I need that's the second chapter in my book, or, you know, one day I'm going to sit down and write this book. You wrote a book. You actually did it. So, you know, what helped to make you write it?
I thought we needed it for Sawyer. I think that it was important to show him that an autism spectrum character is not something that we have to hide. It's not something that we have to be ashamed of. It's something that we're proud of. He's different. We love different. We're all different. and so that's where it came from, was just out of love for him. And two, that his interests were science and inventing, and there weren't a lot of kids' books, little kid books, about science and inventing.
That's cool. That's, and you hit it on top. I mean, it's this, the story is, it's nice. I mean, it's, I sat down to read it and it's awesome. And you, like I said, you got great illustrations there, and you get to feel for where you're going with the book. It's nice. What would you say is the main message of The Littlest Inventor? Some child sits down and reads it. What would you hope that they take away, I guess is my point?
I hope they take away that we're all different, and that that's something to be celebrated. That just because you're a kid doesn't mean you can't advocate for yourself. You know, I hope they're all proud of who they are. I hope they all accept other kids who are different.
Nice. Let's kind of turn that around. And as an adult, let's say like a teacher reading this, what would be your thought about them taking a takeaway?
I think it's particularly good for teachers who aren't special ed teachers. In our situation, Sawyer is not in a special ed class. He's in a general ed class. And a lot of teachers have a fear of teaching a spectrum kid or a special needs kid. And I think it's good to see that these kids are positive and they bring something special to a classroom that we all need.
Excellent. Let's look at some of the content. On page 8, your character says, "This shouldn't be hard. There's got to be a way to overcome what I'm feeling here today." Talk about what's going on there.
So he's having sensory overload, and this is what kind of happens before we see an autistic kid have a meltdown. But instead of having a meltdown, he's realizing what's happening in his own situation, and he knows that he can fix it, which is what we strive for.
Oh, that's excellent. That's, you know, and it's, you get that feeling from the book because you see, and he's come up with his plan and he's come up with this idea, and he knows his parents are going to be surprised with what he's going to do. I think the line is something like, "They're not going to be ready for what I'm going to do," or something like this. But
that's mostly how we live with Sawyer.
You know, that's what I mean by you get a feel for where, you know, the point of the story is that you're not quite sure where it's going, but let's go with him on this. So I like that, you know. Later, the character talks about a new look he has created to help him deal with the grocery store. And you've kind of touched on that a little bit with some of the, like the vest and so forth and the fidget and stuff like that. But, you know, what's kind of cool is that when I hear you talk, you know, I really hear you talking about him advocating for himself and so forth. And you see that here, and he's developed this new look. What I'd like you to talk about here is this whole idea of dealing with the grocery store.
Well, when Sawyer was little, even pre-diagnosis, and he was diagnosed the week after he turned 2, so he was really little. He was insane every time we went to the grocery store. And as a parent of a typical kid, you probably can't even fully grasp like the meltdowns every time we went to the grocery store. And we didn't know about sensory processing issues. We didn't know about autism. We just knew that he was crazy. And then once we had the diagnosis and we started going to therapy, then we learned that the lights, the sounds, the smells, it was all so overwhelming to him. It was literally like nails on a chalkboard, and he just couldn't take it. So we started trying to find ways that we could help him help himself. And now, I mean, Sawyer will absolutely say, "I need my heavy vest for this. I need my headphones for this." And so we don't push him on him, but they're accessible so that if he's, you know, feeling overwhelmed in any situation, and now it's not the grocery store anymore because he's older, but, you know, whatever situation he has, he needs access and the ability and the confidence to regulate his own sensory overload. That's what we strive for.
Well, cool. Thank you. Let's take that and kind of go, if you could go with me on this for just a second. You and your husband working and learning how to work with your son. What advice would you give to other parents who are just stepping in to realizing their new world that they have?
You know, every kid is different. Every kid is different, not just spectrum kids. Every single kid is different. And so I can't say what to expect out of your spectrum kid, but I would absolutely say it gets better. As they get older, they learn more, you learn more, and not only do you become an advocate for them, but they can absolutely be an advocate for themselves.
Awesome. So, and part of what I hear you saying is that you got to have some patience and understand that, like you just said, it gets better and you're getting better at probably interpreting your son, as well as your son is starting, you know, has learned how to communicate with you about how he's feeling and such. And so I would think that that's part of that patience that you probably have to develop.
Right. And, you know, Asperger's is a relatively new diagnosis. And even if you don't call it Asperger's, if you call it high functioning autism, it's relatively new altogether. And so as it's, you know, come around, we have more kids on that end of the spectrum now that would have not been diagnosed 15 years ago, or even 10 years ago. And when we started this journey, I didn't find a whole lot of positive material, but then, you know, you think back to the 1950s and autistic kids were being institutionalized. So we have come a long ways. But there just wasn't a lot of hope. I mean, these were the kids who people, you know, said, well, they'll be on disability, you know, sitting in their parents' basement playing video games. And that's absolutely not the case. I mean, these kids are going to be the Googlers or the Facebookers or the NASA scientists. I mean, right. They can absolutely do anything they want to do. And we've probably always had a little of this high-functioning autism that we just didn't call autism. And so I think we can't lose hope for our kids.
Oh, that's excellent. That's excellent advice. And I appreciate you giving that. And you're so right. I mean, there's just so much more that we know that you understand a little bit more about how to work with the kids and how to learn and pay attention and not treat it as if it's like the kid is acting out just to act out, I guess is the point. Or withdrawing just to withdraw.
Right. We say that misbehavior is just missed behaviors. Like if you don't see what's leading up to the sensory problems and before the meltdown happens, there's a lot of missed behaviors before there's actually any misbehavior.
I like that. So misbehavior is actually missed, as in right. M-I-S-S-E-D, right?
Right.
That's awesome. I think that in itself, is probably something that, do another book on that. I think that in itself could be a story that would help provide patience for not just parents, but the, you know, teachers who are getting ready to have a child who are going to have these challenges, that it would help them understand and recognize, I guess is my point. So let's go back to the horses for a minute. So Sawyer rides the horses, right?
He does.
So now that we know a little bit about Sawyer, we know a little bit about your book and so forth. So let's go back to thinking about those horses. So when he rides on the horses, does he have to have the noise-canceling headphones on? Or?
No, he doesn't. And the biggest problem sensory-wise is the helmet, because nobody likes to wear the equestrian helmet, you know?
Right.
But they all do. I mean, you know, all the kids do eventually wear it. You have to get on the horse. It's not comfortable and it's not fun. You know, believe it or not, Sawyer is so much more calm on a horse. My dad went out there one time and watched him, and he's like, you know, this would be great if you could just carry him on a horse for the rest of his life. so if he could walk around the house and school, if we could just get like a miniature maybe. But it, you know, also is good for not just like speech issues or auditory processing issues, but just empathy, like learning how to connect with the animal. Horses are really empathetic. Like they can kind of feel how the rider's feeling. It's good for teaching him to look straight ahead. You have to hold your head up and look where you're going. You can't look down at the horse's back or you won't ever get anywhere. Like I said, I'm not a horse person. I grew up in Eastman. We had more cows than horses. But, you know, it's really amazing what they accomplish on horseback.
That's awesome. It's obvious that you don't have to know horses. Except that it seems to be something that he's able to do really well. And, you know, to a lot of people, I when I was a principal, we had an after school program, and one of the parts of it was to we had lots of different things that kids did. And one of them was we had a farm down the road where they taught riding on horses. And it was just funny getting kids who'd never been around horses to horses. And so I've experienced some of that with kids who've just never been around animals, period, other than dogs and cats. And, you know, so that in itself is a neat experience, I would think, for kids.
They actually have a pregnant horse there now that's due to give birth in about a month. So
wow.
That should be really exciting.
Most definitely. All right. Well, so let me ask you a question. So we've been talking about The Littlest Inventor. Do you have another one in the works? Do you have another book coming?
I hope so. Sawyer is a constant source of new material.
Nice. I do know that you have a blog and a website, and so I know I heard you say in there that he's source of new material, but I actually interrupted you. Do you have a book?
I don't have another one being published right now. This one just came out, but I have written others that I hope will be published.
There you go. All right, you publishers out there, you need to listen. This is a good book, so you need to look at our other ones because it's got to be just as good or better. So before we get ready to close, where can listeners connect with you, find your books, or just connect with you personally?
Well, the books are available online at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, IndieBound, and I'm online. My website is www.mandicmathis.com. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Mandy C. Mathis.
Excellent. And I'll have all those links in the show notes to those different areas where they can connect with you, as well as where they can find The Littlest Inventor. Now, I got two questions before we say goodbye, and I like to ask these of all my guests. And here's the first one. If you were given the chance to talk with 100 brand new teachers who haven't started teaching yet, what advice would you give them?
I would say every single one of them will have contact with an autistic child, whether they're a PE coach or a general ed or a gifted teacher. Every single one of them will probably teach an autistic child. So this is not something that just affects special ed teachers. I would tell them that kids with autism are not typical, but they're not inferior. And as a society, we all benefit from neurodiversity. We're all part of the human spectrum. And teachers should focus on strengths and abilities, the positive attributes of every child in their classroom.
Excellent advice. Excellent. So here's the last one, and you gotta make sure that you share with everybody why this is a little more difficult for you to answer. Do you have a teacher in your past who made a difference in your life? If given a chance to say thank you, who would it be, and what would you say?
And you are absolutely trying to get me in trouble. My Aunt Melinda was my 10th grade honors English teacher, Melinda Dennis, Dr. Melinda Dennis now, and my cousin Melanie Peacock was my 9th grade physical science teacher. So I would say they're my best teachers because, you know, the best teachers don't teach you what to think, but how to think. And teaching definitely doesn't stop in the classroom. And they've been my teachers for my whole life.
That's awesome. Thank you very much. You did a great job of that. See, there's nobody going to be upset at that.
Yeah, I have to go to Thanksgiving soon, you know.
Awesome. Well, the good thing is it'll be about way before Thanksgiving. So this is plenty of time to, I'll make sure I share it with both of them. How about that?
Right.
Mandy, thank you so much for joining me today. Your book is awesome. I love the message that you were sharing. And thank you for creating such an insightful book. And I just can't thank you enough. And just best wishes to you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hello, listeners. We want to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. That's teachinglearningleadingk12.com. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Just search Teaching Learning Leading K-12 in the iTunes store. Check back often for updates and new material.
Hang tight, everyone. I'm going to let go of the wall.
You have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, recorded in Eastman, Georgia, at the Heart of Georgia Precinct.
Hey, did you know that we're now available on Google Play Music? That's right. You can now find Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 on Google Play Music. Check us out.